Go ahead.
Well, this went on to other things with the school and the office and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And, for about 6 or 7 years, and as time was going along, the last 2 years, especially the last year, I was reaching the point to where I was coming in and I wasn't, I was getting depressed. I was watching a blank TV. I didn't really much care about anything. And one day, instead of walking to the office, there was a psychiatrist's office out front, and I just walked in to see her.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have much contact, because shortly after that, I did crash. I do know I did sit down and try to talk to my wife one time. It didn't work. I did get her into going to see the doctor. The doctor did tell her to not... PTSD really wasn't known at the time.
Mm-hmm.
She did tell her, I learned later, that she was not to corner me, which was a very stupid statement because I have never touched a woman in my life. I never touched Linda in my life. All I know is she never once gave me any support, helped me at all. She's probably, I guess, maybe like others, I never frightened her, but I just know she never carried out the vows of her marriage. I'm not bitter anymore. I'm just stating the facts that, you know.
How long were you two essentially, I consider that you must be divorced now.
Yeah, we were married about 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And I just, that I never received one ounce of support from her. Like, hey, dear, let's go in and sit down. I'll be with you. I'll help you all the way. Nothing. None of that at all. So finally, one night, the girls were just babies, 3 years old, 5 years old.
Your daughters.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I was, you know, and what's so funny is that her daddy had been suffering for quite some time from depression. She knew what depression was.
Linda's father had been.
Her father.
Yes, uh-huh.
And then finally one morning I woke up and realized that in the middle of the night she had abandoned me. She had taken my two girls and meant a lot and abandoned me to her mother. And that my girls told me years later that she left because she was afraid that I was going to hurt her and her girls, and her doctor told her not to corner me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to explain to them, and I'm going to hear now,
mm-hmm.
that it was not the truth, because I spent what immediately crashed and was found walking around, I think either the den or was walking around the cul-de-sac in La La Land, and was immediately put into the Fort Worth Hospital, and was immediately given shock treatments. The doctor had tried numerous times to get her to tell him what the problem was. She refused to talk to him at all, to give any kind of indication of what was going on. Later on, after the shock treatments were done, I was out. Then I went into another hospital. I was out for a while, and
mm-hmm.
I couldn't even go to the barber shop by myself.
Gary, were you able to talk to the doctor yourself, or do you not remember?
No, I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't even remember shock treatment. I just know I don't remember anything. In fact, it locked up my memory even past. We had gone to New Orleans a year before,
mm-hmm.
with the girls on
mm-hmm.
vacation.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even remember that. And then I don't even remember, you know, long time back that.
Did they tell you, and Gary, this is your personal information, so it's up to you, of course, whether you answer or not. I'm just trying to be clear as to what happened. Did they tell you what was wrong with you? Did they give you a diagnosis?
No. All they had down there is, as I look back and see all the stuff I've got.
Sure.
And I have all the medical reds. All they have down there is that his wife left him. That's all.
Huh.
That's all they had. And nothing from her.
No information.
Nothing. Mm. Nothing.
That's very sad.
Nothing.
It's very sad.
And it makes me infuriated about her. She left a sunken ship.
Yes,
dying
sir.
Ship.
Yes, sir.
Which is equivalent to leaving a guy in a wartime situation. And even today, she has no comprehension of what that means.
Do you have any contact with her?
Oh, I have to. I have a granddaughter, my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure.
And if I mentioned to her, she wouldn't have anything. She's just, she's a weird cat.
I think that's becoming.
She's at school, but she is.
That's becoming clear. Yeah.
She's probably one of the most unemotional people I've ever met. Cold, I guess, is the word I would have to say.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, and so that kills the argument about me hurting anybody. She just didn't want anything to do with that. In fact, she married, I think, within 6 months, which has always led a good friend of mine, a very good friend of mine in Denton, who said he had strong belief that she had probably something else going on. He had indications that she was, but I can't prove that. But she did marry, I think, within a very short time after that.
Are they still together?
No, he was found stealing money out of her teacher's fund.
That was the end of that.
That was the end of that. And now she lives with her mother. And but I just know that she never once helped me, and she refused to help. And then when I went down to the hospital, the doctor had nothing to work on. He was trying to, and this time I remember the doctor, and I remember a lot of the hospital speeches, mm-hmm. exactly the shock treatments and all that, and Dr. Tripp, and he kept trying to figure out what was wrong, and he finally made me call and beg her to tell him what was wrong. And it was so bad that her husband came on the line and told me that he wanted to talk to my doctor.
Yes, sir.
And he talked to my doctor. This is probably the lowest point in my life.
And
I'm talking to my wife, who I still loved. Mm-hmm. And he told him that she had no information to give and that to not bother them again. I was so embarrassed. From that point on, there was nothing much you should use for clinical depression other than lithium and some other drugs.
Yes, sir.
Drugs.
Yes, sir.
And
mm-hmm.
I was so bad off that I would, I'd wet the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I would stay in bed for days. And it took a major initiative to get me out of the bed, walk a few paces.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time when insurance would allow you to stay in, and the phone company let me stay, I think they might have got a possible, even then, possible feeling that they could have had their butt suit off,
mm-hmm.
you know, for what had been going on.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe then. I don't know. It would have happened now, you know.
But your insurance coverage was still available?
Yeah,
it was
still available.
What about the VA?
I didn't go to the VA.
Okay. They weren't involved.
We didn't know what post-traumatic syndrome was.
Yes.
Yeah,
you know,
I didn't even think about that. They were treating me, and I had a good doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can remember asking him, when am I going to get my drive back? When am I going to get my drive back? And so I can remember I was in the hospital two or three times in the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I was in, I came out. We made an agreement with the phone company that I would not go back to work, and they would give me an additional 3 months off. And I find my own work. I can remember that I was in such depression. I never once considered suicide because of my girls. I will tell you this. There were many, many a night that I wish I would go to sleep and never wake up. I remember that the depression, and I've talked to groups about depression. They say, what's depression about?
Mm-hmm.
I say, the only way I can possibly describe it, it's a nightmare while you're awake. Nightmares at night are bad, but there's a good side to that is that you wake up and you say, thank God,
mm-hmm.
I woke up.
Mm-hmm.
In the daytime, you can't wait till you go to sleep. You know, and if you can't go to sleep, you take sleeping pills. And it is, to me, I have not had other pains. It's the most painful pain I've ever had. you know, you can't roll, you can't get a position, there's nothing you can do, you can't walk, you can't do anything. You just have to sit there, and you have to sit there and take it and pray to God, please take this thing out of me. Whatever it is, get this thing out of me. I can't take it. I can't take it. Well, after a period of time, I guess the lithium took its effect after a few years. Anyway, it was hell, and
yes,
I dealt with depression all the way up to about 2 years ago. At which time we finally found the right medication, combination of medications that worked.
And that takes a lot of time and patience.
Well, it took,
on the part of the doctor.
A lot of other things.
What else?
I'm bouncing ahead here, but let me go ahead and finish
okay.
that part.
Sure.
What happened is, one day, I'm walking along and I just kind of start feeling pretty good after 30 some odd years, and it wasn't like a bulb light came on or all that. I just feeling pretty good, and you know, and then for some reason, you know, I'd always felt my basic good feeling when I was depressed was, you know, I just go to the store and come home and do this or do that, and this time I felt pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
To the point I think I'm going to go out and trim the trees. And it didn't dawn on me. And my drawing was pretty much, I had done years earlier and had not ever wanted to do any more. And I went to bed, and the next morning I woke up, and first time I heard birds chirping out on the trees.
Hmm.
I said, God, I don't have birds out there. Went out and looked, you know, and I felt pretty good. So, you know, I went in and started drawing, you know, and it still hadn't dawned on me. And so then I went to the store, and I was beginning to see things that I hadn't seen before and observe things I hadn't seen before. And I went in there and talked to the guy, the clerk, about something, and I was actually listening to this guy, what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I said, by God, I'm well. I am normal. I am normal. And I called my doctor and told him, I said, I'm well. I can't believe it. I'm well. And he said, well, last thing running in the area, I said, I think I saw some stages. I think that I saw you coming out of that were kind of like the last stages. He said, I think we found the right medication, but we're not for sure. We may have to increase or decrease over
sure.
a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you got to stay in touch with me. If you fall back, we may have to increase or whatever. And I did.
Right. Right.
And had a fall back. But the big deal was my concentration was back. I could remember the entire phone numbers now, where I used to remember only the 972 and the first three digits if I was lucky. I had for years. I'm getting way ahead of myself.
It's okay.
So you got to take me back now.
All right. I will.
I was able to go out and carry on a conversation with somebody. I was probably, my doctor says, the greatest actor of all times. He says, we used to come out in the lobby, and we'd see you with your head between your knees, and we'd say, Gary, come on in, and you'd pop right up, and you'd come over and say, hey, hi, Doc, how you doing? I got a funny story to tell you. And you'd come on in, and you'd start talking, you know, and we'd be talking around, and you'd be fine, you know, and we could figure out what the hell's the matter with you. Mm-hmm. Why were you out there, and how come you're doing here? And then we know what the deal is that you had this automatic response of a cover-up of your depression. And all during this time, since I had, in my period of recovery, and I'm going to go back and touch on something to tell you when I started recovering.
Sure enough. Uh-huh.
A period of recovery started at ground zero when I was feeling okay, and my father had retired from the advertising business and was just doing some engraving, and God save my father. What a man.
Mm-hmm.
He's fired up his business after he had retired from me, and I can remember starting up. We had advertising specialties, pens, pencils, calendars, and so forth, and he had it. A very good business at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember starting off at MacArthur Road, parking my car, and having a pencil catalog in my pocket. And I went door to door selling pencils. And somewhere along the line, the fifth or sixth door somewhere, I sold some lady 500 pencils with her name on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like somebody shot me with some adrenaline.
Uh-huh.
And next two or three doors, I turned into the old salesman I was. Because of GTE, I was a salesman of the year.
Right. You
know, I mean, I was your best. I was your best. Despite all the terrible stuff I was going through, I was your best salesman.
And it just started coming back
and
to you.
And it started coming back. And it came back. And then the business started growing. And then I started doing stuff, joining the Chamber and the Heritage Society. And since that time, I have got more damn awards in here than you know what to do with, from the Rotary Club to the Chamber of Commerce, Rotarian of the Year to the Ambassador of the Year twice for the Chamber of Commerce to the Irving Parks and Recreation, to the Irving Schools Golden Apple Award of the Year, to God knows what all I've got in here. The City of Irving High Spirited Citizen Award. You know, I got three boxes full of awards out here. And I did that after I had recovered. And all during this time, I was putting on this acting job. Now, I had some ups and downs, some terrible ups and downs.
I'm sure. I believe
that. But I hit them. And what I would do, I would go up and talk to people and say, yeah, well, how you doing, George? You know, good to
mm-hmm.
see you. Know,
mm-hmm.
We talk, you know, and really, that's a good, you know. And I'd talk and so forth. And I could walk out the door and say, hey, what did y'all talk about? I don't know. Haven't the foggiest idea. And I would go places, and I couldn't remember where I was going. And I had to take, if I go into the grocery shop, and I'd take my list. And sometimes I forget my list. And then this one's I forget my billfold.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and it was terrible. And that's what it went for years and years and years, but I was a great actor. And I got to go back one other thing. One of the most terrible parts of my life was after I got out, or while I was during the hospital stay,
mm-hmm.
you know, during the hospital stay, and this is what I'm probably most proud of myself of,
yes, sir.
Is that I had to go over and keep my visits every 2 weeks with my daughters, weekends, and pick them up while she was living with this man, who I still loved, and tremendous anger and jealousy.
You still loved her?
Now?
Then. You still loved
her. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We hadn't been separated. We hadn't been gone long. I mean, she's sleeping. As far as I'm concerned, she's sleeping on another man.
I know. Yeah.
And so, you know, and I'm having to go over there and ask, knock on the door, and she comes to the door. My wife is coming to the door and tells me to be sure and have them back, you know. This is heartbreaking. This is killing me. And I would, you know, and it was so bad I couldn't drive or come back driving because I was crying all the time. I couldn't drive because of the tears in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I would still, before I would go, like a Thursday or a Wednesday of that weekend that I had to go pick them up, you know, I was just miserable. I was terrible because I hated those weekends, but I went and I picked them up. And during those weekends, a lot of those times,
mm-hmm.
My father and mother would entertain them, and I would go to bed because I was so terribly sick. You know, headaches, just sick.
But your parents backed you up.
And yeah, and my friends would entertain them in another room, and
sure.
Yeah, and by the time we get home, I'd have to take them home. And I'd come back, and I'd cry.
Yes, sir.
And I was depressed, and I was just, oh, that was over. And that went on for months and months and months. And it was terrible. And so, anyway, all that went along. And
mm-hmm.
meanwhile, I don't know what, after a year or so. By the way, it took me a year to learn how to run between two goalposts. Now, here's a guy that had an NAIA record for stolen bases. I could almost run to first base as fast as Mickey Mantle. True.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could run. I loved to run. Now I'm talking about I couldn't get my mind in sync with my legs and my body because of depression, because it was a chemical disorder. That's what it is. It's Kimball disorder.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes. I'm talking about the goalposts on the same side of the field, 12 feet apart. And I slowly worked up to that and slowly learned how to walk fast between lines, worked up to jogging between on a football field between that, and eventually learned how to run, and eventually learned how to run. During this time, at the first of this, when I went down, I still continued to go to the reserves. My buddies covered me in the reserves. When I went to the reserves, I was in no shape. I was so drugged up from the hospital. My shoes were untied. My shirt was untied. I was unshaven, you know. So my buddies would report me in to my CO. I mean, they see how I was in. I was on a job, and they would take me over to Q, and at first they'd just tell me to lay down. And one day they found me walking back over toward the air wing, and they took me back over and locked me up, had the key, and they locked me up and told the VOQ director to not let me out of there under any circumstances. They left me food and water in there and for 2 days, and they'd make up excuse and so forth. Well, anyway, somehow the CEO found out about it, and he wrote me up as a bad fitness report. And then the next CEO wrote me up as a bad fitness report. Well, two bad fitness reports, and you're out of the Marine Corps.
Right, right.
So the next horrendous thing that happened to me is I'm back in the hospital. I have no family. I have no job, and I don't have my Marine Corps. That I guess, was probably one of the next lowest points of my life. You know, and
What year was that? Do you know, Gary?
About 1979, and I don't have anything, and I've got the depression, and you know, I just think, why, what did I do to deserve this?
But you later were able to come back into the reserves, is that right?
Well, it took a year and a half of fighting.
Yes, sir.
I mean, hard work and paperwork. It took about 14 inches of paperwork. we don't have time to talk about it, but. But I had to start at the bottom, and I did it all myself. And I basically, unless you want to know how I did it.
Well, go ahead and tell me, how did you do it?
Well, I basically had to go back, and I talked to my two men that wrote the bad fitness reports. And I said, if I were able to prove to you that I was sick,
would it make any difference?
Would you... and proved to you that I should not that I should not have been on duty. Would you have written those fitness reports? He says, no, we wouldn't have written those. Okay. So I went back and I took the letters from my doctor in the hospital and took them to the medical doctor there at the Navy Dallas and showed it to him. And he said, you shouldn't have been on duty. Thank you very much. Write me a letter. So took them to the COs, and they wrote a letter and said, after we see here, we would not have written these reports. And one doctor said, after I know him now, he should not have not been at home, but now I think he should have been promoted. But one of them was a former Blue Angel. So anyway, then I took those two letters and other material and made up a book. And they had been called, you know, the Board of Correctional Naval Review?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Not only had that package, I went to D.C. and met with the, met with the board. I went beforehand. Carried that thing with me and presented it to him and went over it with him as to what was happening and what happened. And I would like to present it to the board as to what would happen. And it took a year and a half of paperwork flying back and forth and denial, this and that. And finally, one morning, I got a call at 6 o'clock in the morning from the XO over here. And he says, he knew what was going and so forth. He said, well, Gary, congratulations, you're a Marine again. And I cried.
Yes, sir.
I put on the phone and I cried. I mean, by God, I was a Marine again. And see, all during this time, I also was attending meetings. I was telling them I was continuing to take my, I was continuing to go to drills with no money, you know, and that helped.
And just to sort of round it out, Gary, you... retired from the Marine Reserves then in 1999, is that right?
Yeah.
As a lieutenant colonel.
Yeah, well, see, after I got back in, I even got promoted to lieutenant colonel.
Yes, sir.
So, see, I was still doing good, but I wasn't well. And more
Understood.
All along, more and more drugs are being made. More and more meds are being coming along.
Mm-hmm.
So it was taking a business. And meanwhile, after that, I was single. I was, you know, doing pretty good. And then I got remarried.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back downhill because the marriage was terrible. I was living with a woman who was just terrible to live with. She had a boy who liked to burn flags. He was gay. He was obnoxious. He knew everything there was to know. He liked to tell me what to do. He knew everything there was to do. And then, I was basically, she cared more for her son than she did me. Every time we'd go to the hospital with her, he would take over. I finally told him one day, I said, I signed the papers. I am now in charge of her. You are second. You understand that? Don't go be going to the doctors, and don't be taken over. And I lived with her only because of the fact she was basically a wino. She was abusive.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived like roommates. It was a terrible living conditions I was in.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible. And the only reason I lived with her was try because I lived two reasons. At first, because I wasn't going to do to her what my first wife did to me. I was going to try to help her.
Right.
That was a mistake. Number
right.
two, I was terrified of getting a divorce because I didn't know how, if I'd fall apart again. And finally, my doctor said, if you're not, I'll tell you this, something will be aware, something will happen, and when it does happen, you jump on it and you do it, you get out, and then you stay out. Well, something did happen. And I was at the hospital. She got sick. I was up there for 2 days. And then I went home one night to take a rest. I told the boy to come up there and stay with her. And I called up there the next morning. I said, you can tell Eric to go home. I'm on the way up. And she says, oh, please, give me a break. And so that was it.
That was the end of that.
That was it. When she came home, I said, you people are out of here.
Yeah.
Get your flag burner and get out of here.
Yeah.
And the boy said something to me. And I almost hit him. I told her, if you don't get this boy out of this house right now, I said, I'm going to hurt him bad. And he already knew, he was already scared of me. So they left. And things started getting better. And that's when we found the meds.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor said, it's not just the meds that helped you, but he said, you have had for years. He said, you might have gotten well better. But for the last 10 years, you've had some broken bridges in front of you that need to be repaired
mm-hmm.
that have kept these medicines from working. He said, when you got out of this marriage, okay, then these bridges were fixed, and somehow these medicines were then began, in his opinion, were able to work. And now you don't have to play act anymore. Your concentration is good.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you're fine. You're getting along well. And I'm doing well. And then the one thing I miss is probably the relationship with the female. Now, the artwork really came in many years ago. It just kind of came in by strain. It was during a two-weeker down in Florida. We had a... it was a bad 2 week. We had a terrible mission to run. We were looking for a missing girl, and we had FH, and they had we were running a red eye mission, trying to find heat seeking, and trying to find her. We were working all hours, and one of our Marines was paralyzed from that down on the wreck that he came down and driving his car down, and we had to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
One night I was in the club, and there was this huge mural on the wall. Three A4s doing an attack mission at night, and it reminded me of time when I was there, and I said, I got to have it. So I started sketching on a couple of beer pot napkins.
Mm-hmm. So you started sketching.
And I sketched them out pretty good. So I took it back to Denton, and I took it to this lady, and she said, that's not bad. She says, why don't you do it yourself? And I said, I can't do that. Yeah, you can. So we started working in oils, and sure enough, I did that with a lot of help. She helped by halfway to me do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have it here. And I short at all my shows, and it's my first and last oil. And then I met another lady who introduced me to Prisma pencils, Prisma color pencils, which mm-hmm. I've been in ever since. Mm-hmm. I still do straight pencil. I like straight pencil, too.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm going into straight pencils of the same color. This is going to be really fun. I haven't started it yet. It'll be later on. But, you know, you do straight pencil, black and white.
Mm-hmm.
But how you make the different
like shading.
Shadings mm-hmm. is that you use light, you know, not so heavy. You know, there's about three different pencil color strengths,
mm-hmm.
okay,
mm-hmm.
that you can use for shading.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with the Prismacolors, there's about two or three different colors you can use, and one's a gray, and it has six different strengths. So I can do that gray on a different type of mat board, and I saw one, and it's gorgeous. It's great. So anyway, so I started doing Prismacolors, and never had a lesson, and I just learned like building a house, you know.
Who are some of the people that you've either given your artwork to or who have requested it or who have it now in their collection?
Well, I give most of my stuff away.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them I've given the prints away, and I kept the originals for my kids.
Mm-hmm.
But the people I've got have been two Texas governors, as you know, the two commandants. I got one former Secretary of the Navy. Troy's got some. Aikman.
Troy Aikman of the Dallas Cowboys.
Hmm? Yeah.
I'm just clarifying. Troy Aikman. Uh-huh.
I've got numerous baseball players that I have not only done, that I have done of and for, which
mm-hmm.
has been a thrill because I love the game of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I've done Duke Snider and Carl Erskine, two Hall of Famers for the Dodgers. I've done Goose Gotchies of the Yankees, Bobby Richards of the Yankees. I've done one of Roger Maris from the Roger Maris family. I got a letter from his wife that Bobby Richards said that they wanted to open up a museum up in North Dakota, and they were looking for paintings, so I did one for them.
Mm-hmm.
One is hanging in the museum at Paris Island, and one I've got finished this one going to MCRD. One was hanging in the Dallas Museum of Natural History. I did one for Rusty Greer for the Rangers. I did one of Dick Bosman, former pitching coach of the Rangers. I'm sitting there looking around the room. I've done musical instruments. They're in some clubs.
Gary, how important is the artwork now to you?
It's become major.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you why, because there's a creative side in there that is as important to me as going to the bathroom. Not because mm-hmm. I want to do it. If I don't do it, especially if I've got something to do like this one going to California, and I need to do it, I'll get down, and I may even reach a point to where I may have trouble going in and starting. I mean, getting up out of a chair and doing it. Once I have gone in there and done some for a couple, 2 or 3 hours, and once I sit down, I'll sit there for 2 or 3 hours, maybe
mm-hmm.
4 hours,
mm-hmm.
working on something and, you know, doing it. Unless I've reached a point that just absolutely I can't deal with it anymore, I'll generally go to a point that I'll say, hey, I've done more than what I thought or reached the point where I thought I wanted to go for today.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll come away, and I'll feel pretty good, you know.
Yes, sir.
I really feel good.
Yes,
you know?
Sir.
I feel like I have done what I needed to do with my artwork for the day. So I need to do it.
I think that's.
And just like today,
yeah.
We finished talking here.
Uh-huh.
I'll rest up a while,
uh-huh.
And then by God, I better go and do about 3 or 4 hours work, because if I don't, I'll start getting down at myself. And I don't know if you know what the classic definition of depression is. Do you know?
No, I do not. No.
It's anger turned inward. And from that, it leads to chemical disorders and lots of other things. So I have had lots of that, and a lot of that's been because I have gotten mad at myself because I have sat on my butt knowing that there's artwork in there to be done. I'm not getting any younger. I need to do some stuff that I need to leave for my kids, and I don't do it. So every night I go to bed angry. The next morning I say, today I want to do it. As the day goes along, I get angry and I get that much more depressed. Mm-hmm. And I want to reach a point where I might end up in the hospital.
Right. You
and that's because I get my hours turned around. I can't sleep. Got my days mixed up. Mm-hmm. I'm back in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I also got to mention, during the second marriage,
mm-hmm.
when I was going to hospitals, I had a wife that never came to see me. She never even went to me. I mean, talking about if I got sick, I'm not just talking emotionally, she never showed up. You know, she wouldn't go with me. She tried to get my daughters to go, take me, and she got mad. She didn't understand why my daughters wouldn't go. My daughters wouldn't go because she thought that was her job. And so that was that type of relationship. So with the artwork, that it's important. Now, I want to get mad at myself for not doing it. Is that because I think of so many people live across the street, next door, everywhere, who live and die,
mm-hmm.
and they leave a good name, you know,
mm-hmm.
and grandfather so-and-so, okay, leave a tombstone, and they're slowly forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I am fortunate enough that I'm leaving some artwork that hopefully my kids will pass on down the line. Down the line, you know, a long way that I can leave. I'm having the opportunity to leave something other than a tombstone. And I get mad at myself because I don't do more for them to keep. And that's what makes me angry. And so, you know, having this ability, or what talent, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
leaving this stuff for them, and not doing it is almost anti-religious, as my pastor told me one time. He says, you know, God created this thing for you to do, and you're not doing it. You know, he's not going to be a happy camper.
Mm-hmm.
And because he knows you're giving it away, your prints, you're making people happy with it. You know, it's not just for your family, but you said you're making people happy with it. They get excited about it. You don't do it, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And since I'm not married, I need something that I need this creativity for some reason,
mm-hmm.
To go in there and make something, make this thing work.
Well, I think you've explained it very, very clearly, Gary.
And so, yes, I would be honored to have something in your place, or two things in your place, to have you show forever. And I'll give you probably both of them. You can make a decision which one you want to hang up to deal with.
Yes, sir.
Either the eagle or the Iraqi. You can do both.
Well, Gary, one of the things that you have done that will last beyond both of us is you've given your time to doing an oral history interview and discussing your experiences in Vietnam.
Well, see, the kids can go. I might have great-great-grandkids that go to Texas Tech. And they'll go through the museum and say, there's my daddy's painting.
Yes, sir.
And other parents that live around me can't go to Texas Tech and say, there's something that my dad's done.
That's right.
And so I'm able to do that.
So it's a special thing, both the painting and the interview. And, Gary, I want to thank you for taking the time to do the oral history interview with us today. And I just appreciate the time that you've spent and want to thank you for your service to the country, as well as for what you're doing now, feeling healthier and better about yourself and doing the artwork that you've done. It's an important thing and honors the service of other veterans as well.
Well, I'd just like to say finally that I thank you guys for having the place to do something like this, because as I told a person of the night, I said, you know, I can finally go to bed and know that this story, and I haven't even talked much about it, the press, other than the fact that I know that the press Walter Cronkite and all the stories that they do and don't tell, and there's one story I didn't tell that was important, that they don't tell, costs us a war. And also the lack of support from your spouse, those two things, are now on print for people to understand how important those two things can play in a war and in a person's life. Are now on paper.
Yes,
now it's somewhere. And I don't have to worry about writing it up and putting it somewhere to give to my kids somewhere to read later. It's somewhere, not only for them, but for other people to read. And I can die tomorrow and know that it's somewhere. And that is so neat. And that is only because of you guys.
Well, it's an honor. It's an honor, sir.